WORT, please obtain a matching gift form from your employer and include it with your donation. As a 501c3 organization, WORT qualifies for matching gifts from employers. WORT Community Radio thanks its listener sponsors and their employers who match their gifts. Il n'est pas une boîte qu'il ne fréquentait.
Welcome to Madison Labor Radio. Labor Radio is dedicated to bringing news, information, and cultural events focused on working people and the labor movement to the Madison area and surrounding communities. I'm Matthew Thompson, a member of UE Local 1186. Your support is necessary to make Labor Radio and all the great programming on WORT possible.
Hi, and I'm Sandy Park, a retiree from both AFSCME and American Federation of Teachers. Today, we check in with UW nurses as they move toward a union election, follow up with union workers as they hold utilities accountable, take a look at the recent elections, and much, much more.
Utilities pledge to use union labor in future renewable projects. Carol Weidel has the story.
Wisconsin Utilities agreed to use union labor in future renewable energy installations wherever possible. This is the first such agreement in the United States. Prior to this agreement, utilities only used union labor in the legacy utilities of coal and natural gas. The utilities that signed the agreement include WEC Energy Group, Alliant Energy, Madison Gas and Electric, and Xcel Energy. The Federal Inflation Reduction Act provides tax incentives for projects built with union labor. In addition, 15% of the workforce must be registered in an apprenticeship program. Union labor spoke to Nate Rasmussen about this agreement and future jobs.
I'm Nate Rasmussen. I'm the president and business manager of IBEW Local 2304.
Can you describe the general terms of this agreement?
Each utility signed a pledge, and the pledge is about a page long, and it talks about the benefits of using local union labor to build these projects, and it goes into Public Service Commission has recognized this is probably best practice, and there's tax incentives for doing that, keeps the money locally in the state, and you know that you're going to be using skilled, trained employees who take pride in their work. The letter of the pledge that the utilities put together kind of outlines all that and then says, you know, we recognize that this is the best practice and we're going to do the best we can to use union labor in the state of Wisconsin when building these projects.
It should be quite an incentive for people to sign up for these apprenticeships.
I would say so. It's definitely going to create a lot of jobs somewhere on one of these pledges. It says that every $1 billion invested in clean energy in Wisconsin creates an estimated 2,700 jobs. You know, these are good paying union jobs. Union jobs are founded on the basis of safety and proper training. So they're good local jobs.
Can you describe the general terms of this agreement?
Each utility signed a pledge, and the pledge is about a page long, and it talks about the benefits of using local union labor to build these projects, and it goes into Public Service Commission has recognized this is probably best practice, and there's tax incentives for doing that. It keeps the money locally in the state, and you know that you're going to be using skilled, trained employees who take pride in their work. The letter of the pledge that the utilities put together kind of outlines all that and then says, you know, we recognize that this is the best practice and we're going to do the best we can to use union labor in the state of Wisconsin when building these projects.
IBEW is in this, and the Laborers Council also is part of this. And what other kind of unions are involved?
The operating engineers, carpenters are doing some work at some of these fields. So there is a kind of a coalition of unions doing the construction here. And you know, as I talk from the IBEW 2304 perspective, we're not as much involved, our members, in the construction of these fields. You know, there are IBEW members at other locals that are working on building these facilities. But then the next step is who operates and maintains that for the next several decades. And that's historically been IBEW, who operates the electrical grid across the country. So it's important that we're focusing on local union jobs for the construction of these facilities, because that's going to be going on for a while. But we also need to focus on who is running and maintaining them for the foreseeable future and making sure that those are local union jobs too.
Reporting for Labor Radio, this is Carol Weidel.
UW nurses petition for union election.
UW Health Nurses United has submitted a formal petition for a union election to the Wisconsin Employment Relations Commission. The union filed this petition March 25th, following the Dane County Circuit Court decision on March 22nd, which declared UW Health to be a political subdivision of the state. This classification places UW Health within the jurisdiction of the Municipal Employment Relations Act, MERA, which gives employees the right to be represented by a union. This strategic move leverages the legal grounds established by the recent court decision, providing a path towards achieving union recognition for UW Health nurses. The legal offensive was made possible by the continuing solidarity of UW Health nurses, advocating not only for the welfare of their patients, but also for the advancement of their profession. By pursuing a union election, UW Health nurses are asserting their fundamental rights as workers to collectively bargain for better working conditions, fair compensation, and improved patient care standards. As the union has emphasized, union representation empowers health professionals to address critical issues within their workplace, ensuring their voices are heard and respected. Beyond its immediate implications, a union victory for UW Health would carry broader significance within the healthcare industry. UW Health is one of the largest employers in Dane County, and a victory at UW Health would greatly enhance the economic and political influence of the union movement in Dane County and in Wisconsin. Meanwhile, workers at Meritor Hospital are in the midst of their contract negotiations. Approximately 500 certified nursing assistants, food service, and other support staff have been in negotiation since March. As Labor Radio reported, significant differences remain regarding compensation and other work-related matters. Members were enraged when, during earlier negotiations, management referred to them as, quote, a commodity, unquote. Negotiations are scheduled to be continued next week through Thursday. Labor Radio will bring you updates as they become available. Thanks to reporter Bryant Novinska-Lowes for information in this report. I am Frank Emsbach for Madison Labor Radio.
Tuesday was Election Day. A local laborer leader explains why he thought it was a great day for labor. Greg Jabowski reports.
Local elections were held on Tuesday, and Kevin Gunlock, president of the South Central Federation of Labor, was very happy with the results over Scuffles' entire area.
Our jurisdiction is 11 counties, so it's not just Dane County. It's Dane County and many surrounding counties. to Dane. And we had a record amount of, or at least a lot of endorsements. The workers, through their unions, interviewed candidates. And the cool thing is, out of the 128 candidate endorsements, not the referenda, workers won with 118 wins. That's a 92% plus win rate, which is our best ever. Also, out of those 128 candidates, we had over 50 endorsed candidates that were union members or from union households, which is the most ever.
Gunlock gives some victory details.
In Dodge and Jefferson County, we won all of our endorsed races for Dodge and Jefferson County Board, first time ever. Dane County Board, we won all of our endorsed seats but one, and that's the same that we did with Columbia County Board, which is just, as people know, is a little north of Dane County. And that was the first time we really focused a lot of effort on Columbia County Board. And that's also the first time that we have flipped that board. There were only one seat each for those counties, respective counties, for all of our endorsements in both Dane and Columbia that we lost. For Greene County Board, we won all of the endorsements except for two seats. And we picked up a really critical seat there. And in Sauk County Board, we won all but three seats, and I think there's something there that we can really build upon next time. Now, still not done, in school boards throughout all of the counties that we made endorsements in, we won all of those seats but two, which is the best ever. And all these are firsts or best. It was really amazing.
School funding must increasingly be met by local tax referenda. These can be tough sells, but Gunlock tells how he thinks some focused campaigns by organized labor led to victories.
The school district referenda that we really focused on was Barneville, Cambria-Friesland, Fenimore, Fort Atkinson, and Stoughton. You know, we won all those. Frankly, we did endorse in 19 school district referenda. That was the one area where we did lose nine of them. But the five that we focused on that the teachers really wanted, we won all five. So that says something about our program. Our program, when we are talking to other fellow union sisters and brothers about, you know, why these elections are important and talking about our candidates, many of them union sisters and brothers themselves, it really means something. And it's a show of solidarity as well when we do that kind of member-to-member contact and discussion about the issues. So it shows that our program really was successful this year.
Gunlock described the SCUFL endorsement process.
So what we do is we have a co-steering committee through SCUFL, and that is democratically elected, as well as having all of the South Central Federation Labor Exec Board, as well as all the sectors being represented. They kind of have they're called steering because they kind of know from all the sectors, okay, who do we want to interview? Who do we want to recommend for an endorsement without an interview? And obviously those would be people we've endorsed before and that everyone's happy with. And we still might send a questionnaire or something, but we only have so much time to do interviews. And right now I think we have 10 nights this year. It was a lot of different nights for interviewing. So we only have so much time. So that's another reason why they do that, to make sure that if we are going to recommend an endorsement without an interview, that we really know those people and they've proven themselves and they're almost always incumbents. Then it goes to the entire South Central Federation Labor delegate body, and then they interview those candidates with questions that are important to them from both the public sector, the private sector, unions, and then they vote on it. And they need a two-thirds majority for an endorsement from the South Central Federation Labor.
That was Kevin Gunlock, president of SCUFL, who was very pleased with the result of SCUFL-endorsed local ballot items after Tuesday's election. For Labor Radio, I'm Greg Jaboski.
International issues showed up on Election Day, too. Next, Labor Radio speaks to a union member about the campaign to vote uninstructed in last Tuesday's Democratic primary.
There were plenty of local elections on Tuesday's ballot, but it was also a presidential primary, and some union members were unhappy with the actions and policies of the Democratic Party and the Joe Biden administration, the presumed favorites of the U.S. labor movement this coming November. Labor Radio spoke yesterday to Harry Richardson, the secretary of Ask Me Local 171, the union representing blue-collar and technical workers on the UW campus, who was part of a coalition that campaigned for Democratic Party primary voters to vote the uninstructed line on the ballot, instead of for the already selected nominee, President Biden, as a way to express dissatisfaction with the Biden administration's policy toward the ongoing Israeli assault on the Gaza Strip. Richardson described what the coalition says must change.
They want an immediate ceasefire. They want an end to military supplies, aid to Israel, and they want food aid and medical aid to go into the Gaza Strip.
Richardson describes the coalition around the uninstructed vote.
Well, there was a broad coalition of people around the state, particularly Palestinian, Arab Americans, Muslims, but also including people of color, younger people, people concerned with what was going on in Gaza with a massacre of civilians. Over 32,000 people have died in Gaza, civilians, mostly women and children at this point. And this is so people got together several months ago, had a statewide campaign, brought out the vote all over the state, especially Milwaukee and Madison, and showed that people were concerned about this issue.
Uninstructed gathered just over 48,000 votes on Tuesday, or about 8.3% of the Democratic primary total. As Biden's margin of victory in Wisconsin in 2020 was less than half this, Richardson says that the administration must take notice.
Those people are not going away. They're not going to change their mind about Biden until Biden changes his policy.
That was Harry Richardson of AFSCME Local 171. For Labor Radio, I'm Greg Jaboski.
The jukebox has to take a leak. The carpet needs a haircut. And the spotlight looks like a prison break.
It's bright.
Cause the telephone's out of cigarettes. The balcony.
Unions for the University of Wisconsin system are celebrating a significant win this week with the agreement to offer paid parental leave for UW employees, including faculty, postdoctoral fellows, and academic staff. Labor Radio spoke to one of the leaders who fought for this benefit.
My name is Madeline Topf. I'm a fourth year in the microbiology PhD program. And I'm a co-president of the Teaching Assistants Association, a labor union that represents graduate students at UW-Madison.
There was a recent agreement about paid parental leave. Can you tell us about that?
On Monday, we found out that all faculty in the UW system, UW-Madison graduate assistants, staff, and postdocs will receive 6 weeks of paid parental leave.
Is this something that the TAA has been fighting for?
We have been pushing this issue since last year. We started a petition last May, which got over 700 signatures. We delivered this petition to the Chancellor of UW-Madison in February. On top of that petition, we had a petition of support from a number of department chairs across UW-Madison. This organization really helped pressure the administration to roll out this policy.
What went into this organizing effort?
This was led by the unions on campus, the Graduate Student Union, Faculty and Staff Union, and the University Employee Union. We collected a lot of very powerful stories of people having to make a decision between continuing their program or continuing their career as a professor, or starting a family and caring for their family, caring for themselves.
How many people will this impact, do you think?
There's over 30,000 workers in the UW system who will be impacted. In the report, it was estimated that there would be about 800 to 1,200 people at UW-Madison who would take advantage of this policy. And that's each year. So this is a pretty significant win where there's hundreds of people who are able to have access to this benefit each year that otherwise wouldn't.
What would you recommend to other people who are trying to get benefits?
Our approach was not only circulating a petition, which in effect just shows how many people are joining together around an issue, but also to collect stories of how people relate with this issue. This is super powerful, not only for elevating the issue among members within the union or among workers that are organizing to understand what each other is going through, but hearing these stories was very powerful to organize among the workers and convince the chancellor and the regents that this is something that people really need, and that the productivity of the workplace is taking a hit because we don't have this benefit. and that the recruitment of top talent is taking a hit because we do not have this benefit.
Where do you go from here?
We are still pushing for a full 12-week paid leave benefit that includes medical leave. We're also campaigning around having regular meetings with the chancellor so that we can discuss these types of issues.
That was Maddie Tuff. This is Janine Ramsey reporting for Labor Radio.
Thousands of auto workers spanning companies across the South and West have spent the better part of the year organizing and agitating for union representation. Now, employees at the Mercedes plant outside Tuscaloosa, Alabama, are ready to lay their cards on the table. Labor Radio has a story.
Over 6,000 workers at the Mercedes-Benz manufacturing plant in Vance, Alabama, 20 miles outside of the town of Tuscaloosa, announced earlier today that they are seeking an election to be represented by the United Auto Workers. This is the second non-union plant to file for an election as a part of the UAW's ambitious campaign to expand membership deep into the country's Sun Belt, where a number of foreign and domestic car manufacturers have set up shop. Mercedes workers began their campaign late last year in the wake of the UAW's rolling strike against the big three auto manufacturers, alongside Tennessee-based Volkswagen employees who filed for their own union election last month. Rank-and-file workers, including Jacob Ryan, Moesha Chandler, and Jeremy Kimbrell, were there to help announce the election in a video posted by the union.
It's time for change at Mercedes.
It's time for justice in Alabama.
It's time for Mercedes workers to stand up.
It only took a matter of weeks for Mercedes workers to reach the union's suggested support threshold for going public, about 30% of employees at the plant. And only a few more weeks before the number grew to over 50%. Now, the union says they enjoy supermajority support among the employees. The campaign's rapid growth and the prospect of union representation creeping southward has drawn the ire of many of Alabama's leading public officials, including its governor, Kay Ivey, who called the prospect of a union at Mercedes, quote, an attack on the Alabama model for economic success. UAW President Sean Fain has been keen to turn the governor's talking point on its head, calling for an end to what he instead calls the, quote, Alabama discount on labor in a March 24th speech to the plant's workers. Quote, the company, the governor, and the business council are trying to make you afraid to stand up because you are so close to realizing a life many thought was impossible. Mercedes is using fear, uncertainty, and division because they are afraid, end quote. The solution to this fear, Fain said, is an equal measure of belief and faith.
Working class people have the power to change the world. That's what you're fighting for right now. A better life for your family. A better life for all of Alabama. Yeah. And the first thing you need to do to achieve that is you gotta believe you can win. That this job can be better. That your life can be better. And that those things are worth fighting for. That's why we stand up.
The statement released by the UAW to accompany the announcement of the election stated that Mercedes workers are targeting as early as May for their own election, hot on the heels of the Volkswagen election scheduled to take place in 2 weeks. Reporting for Labor Radio, this is Sean Hagerup.
Mercedes-Benz. My friends all drive Porsches. I must make amends. Worked hard all my lifetime. No help from my friends. So, oh Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes-Benz?
She was more like a beauty queen from a movie scene. I said, don't mind, but what do you mean? I am the one who dances.
Worker justice fights wage theft. Frank M. Speck has the story.
On March 28th, Worker Justice Wisconsin delivered its first annual report on the state of construction to a group of 34 workers, 11 partners, and 303 viewers across Facebook Live. It was part of the worker justice education campaign to address wage theft, the most common form of theft in the United States. Labor Radio spoke with Rebecca Meyer Rau, Executive Director of Worker Justice Wisconsin, and Daniela Jaime, Lead Construction Organizer about Worker Justice, the campaign, and what it has accomplished. Rebecca Meyer Rau describes Worker Justice Wisconsin.
Worker Justice Wisconsin is a worker center that partners primarily with immigrant workers when they experience things like wage theft, discrimination, unsafe working conditions, and so on. We organize workers, and we also form or incubate worker cooperatives. We also partner with faith and labor communities to augment the voice of workers who are organizing in our organization.
The Worker Justice Report, The State of Construction, highlighted how Hispanic immigrant construction workers face a much different industry than many of their English-speaking counterparts. Can you outline some of the differences? Daniel Jaime responded.
For one, most of the Latinx immigrant construction workers tend to work for an LLC owner who doesn't seem to have any of his employees labeled employees on their taxes. They're all considered, on paper at least, independent contractors. So this, through legalities, ends up making the worker not have the same amount of protections as an employee, even though they're fulfilling that role for the company. So on top of that, the thing that makes something that's an overt labor violation so much more confusing for this worker to be able to defend themselves on is the fact that they probably don't speak the same language as their subcontractor, or if not, then the first tier subcontractor that hired their boss. So they feel as if they can't complain to anyone directly, or their documentation status could be thrown in their face, or the simple perception that it might be thrown in their face limits them from speaking up.
Worker Justice has embarked on an educational campaign focused on wage theft. Can you outline some of the objectives of that campaign?
Yes. The objective, or the primary objective of that campaign, is to educate, again, low-wage workers, immigrant workers, really anybody that might experience wage theft or has friends and family that have experienced wage theft. Why? Because many people don't even understand, A, what wage theft is, and B, if they experience wage theft, what to do about it. And so we are going around educating as many people as possible to educate people on their most basic right, which is their right to get paid at work. And so that's the primary objective, is just to educate them about this basic right. The secondary objective is to prepare people to, in a few years, change the laws regarding how people are paid and how wage theft is prosecuted in this state, because as it stands, there's very little consequence for those who engage in wage theft.
Have workers been able to recoup some stolen wages as a result of your worker justice mobilizations?
Absolutely. Every year, Worker Justice Wisconsin recovers anywhere from $80,000 to $140,000 in owed wages, in stolen wages.
Is there anything else you would like to add?
For everybody who's out there, everybody has workers' rights, no matter where they're from. That includes, very importantly, all immigrant workers.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks to Rebecca Meyer Rau and Daniela Jaime of Worker Justice Wisconsin for their discussion of wage theft and how to fight it. I'm Frank Emsbach for Madison Labor Radio.
Get answers to your workplace questions at the Workers' Fair this Wednesday, April 10th, from 4 to 5:30 at Union South, 1308 West Dayton Street at the UW campus. Meet nurses, teachers, tech and service workers, tradespeople and UW employees who are all ready to answer any workplace question you may have. It's part of Labor Spring 2024, and it's co-sponsored by the Havens Wright Center for Social Justice, the High Road Strategy Center, and the South Central Federation of Labor. Again, that's a workers' fair this Wednesday, April 10th, from 4 to 5:30 p.m. in Union South at UW.
The School of Workers and the South Central Federation of Labor are holding a stewards workshop. This workshop is for anyone interested in building and strengthening their union. Learn the mechanics of being a steward, what happens in the real-world situations. The cost is $50 and covers the workshop, materials, and lunch. The steward training will be next Saturday, April 13th, from 10 to 2 at Madison Labor Temple, room 210A. but please register by Monday, April 8th, by going to Scuffle website at scfl.org.
Thanks to editors Frank Amspach, assistant Robin G., copy editor Simon Gordon, reporters Greg Jaboski, Carol Weidel, Sean Hagerup, Janine Ramsey, Bryant Novinska Lois, and engineer Janine Ramsey. Special thanks to Keith Steffen, our reader coordinator, engagement editor Alice Herman, and to all of our readers and the members of IBEW Local 2304 WORT Staff Collective.
My name is Matthew, and we would also like to thank all of our generous contributors at Labor Radio and WORT. Please stay tuned for Blues Cruise with Dave Watts and the professor, Bill Clark.
You're listening to WORT Madison.
The Salon Piano Series presents Bill Charlap and Rini Rosnes on Saturday, April 6th at 7:30 p.m. and Sunday, April 7th at 2 p.m. at Farley's House of Pianos. Bill Charlap and Rini Rosnes, two of the premier pianists in jazz who are also husband and wife, have joined forces to record their first collaborative album, Double Portrait on Blue Note. Their live shows feature lively renditions of exquisite four-hand jazz piano duets. More information can be found at salonpianoseries.org. The Salon Piano Series presents Bill Charlap and Rini Rosnes on Saturday, April 6th and Sunday, April 7th at Farley's House of Pianos, 6522 Seabold Road in Madison. Live music lives at WORT Madison.